эфире «Экофуд» – подкаст Ивана Меркурьева про футбольную экономику и финансы.
Hello, everybody. Good afternoon. Today is 15th of February when we record this EcoFood podcast where we talk on economic side of football. And I'd like to say a very warm welcome to one of the most informed and most influential people in English football, the spiritual godfather of English Premier League, Alex Finn. Alex, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome.
Alex, what I would like to start with TV rights. The story is that TV rights in English Premier League for last season, Manchester United, first place, got 60 million, approximately. And Blackpool, the last place, got 40 million. At the same time, TV money is approximately 87%, for example, of Wigan budget. And Wigan has the lowest average attendance in English Premier League. So it means that there is some socialist kind of distribution when strong clubs donate weak clubs. Don't you feel there is something artificial in this distribution scheme? And how do you feel the mood of the clubs on this matter?
You're very well informed. And the story of the way that television rights are distributed in England goes back to the formation of the Premier League. Mm-hmm. The people who wanted to create the Premier League were essentially representatives of five big clubs back in 1990. Manchester United, Liverpool, Arsenal, Everton, and Tottenham Hotspur. And their wish to have more power and more money coincided with the Football Association's desire to try and break the power of the Football League and create more opportunities for the England national team. So there was common interest, but with different aims. On the one hand, there was the selfish interest of the big clubs. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, there was the short-sightedness of the Football Association. What happened was the creation of the Premier League. But in those days, 1990, there were 22 clubs. And the big clubs who forced the creation of the Premier League were outnumbered by the small clubs who made up the majority. And therefore, when the Premier League was created, it was one club, one vote. And as a result of this democratic situation, the ITV contract was not renewed and the television contract went to BSkyB, because the majority of the clubs, the smaller and the medium-sized clubs, voted for the money. And as a result of that, there was a democratic institution in the way that the money should be shared. 50% goes to all of the clubs equally. 25% goes from 1 to 20 in the table. So each place is worth about $1 million. And the other 25% goes to how often you're shown on television, with every club guaranteed a minimum number of performances. So democracy was enshrined in the constitution of the Premier League, much against the will of those clubs who started the movement for the breakaway. And it has been that way since. So that broadcasting income means that it is shared by the 20 clubs, and there is not a great difference between whether you finish first or 20th. But of course, the more successful you are, the more successful you are also as a business. So let me rephrase that. to have a successful business, you've got to have a successful team. So not only do you get more broadcast income, but you also get more income through match day, which is through the gate, season tickets, program sales, catering, corporate hospitality. But also your commercial opportunities are increased. Merchandising, sponsorship, and advertising. So broadcast underpins the Premier League, and the revenues that are decided are really decided between the 20 clubs themselves. So that what they are trying to do is to make sure that the 20 clubs in the Premiership all survive and prosper.
Mm-hmm. Understand. So it means that the ideas of changing overseas TV income, such as Liverpool provided this story, if you remember, maybe 2 months ago, they say that Bolton cannot get the same revenue from international broadcasting, the same revenue as Liverpool has. So you think it's not possible to change the current situation, no?
It's going to be difficult because of the constitution. The Liverpool managing director was quite right in what he was saying, that what drives the overseas revenue, and we've seen an enormous increase in this recently, is not Wigan versus Bolton, but it's Liverpool versus Manchester United.
And I agree with it.
Yes, so do I. And as such, Manchester United and Liverpool do deserve a greater share of the overseas rights. In the past, this wasn't a problem because they didn't amount to much. The overseas rights were negligible, but now they are worth £1 billion, over $1.5 billion, $1.5 billion. The democracy of the Premier League is working once again against the interests of the big clubs. More so in this case, because the overseas rights are all divided equally. And that doesn't really reflect the situation in terms of the appeal of the Premier League. However, in order to change the constitution, you need a two-thirds majority, and you will never get that.
14 clubs.
For example, it will never happen. So the most that can happen is that clubs like Liverpool and Manchester United do what they're doing at the moment on the basis of the popularity of the Premier League, which is the biggest, the richest, the most popular football league in the world. They can develop their commercial activities. So they go on overseas tours and they can sell their own television rights on a delayed basis overseas. So Manchester United Television is sold in over 50 countries, but they will never have the right to control their own live matches within the Premier League.
Mm-hmm. Understand. Okay, so if they can grow their commercial revenues, you said during international during visiting another countries like Manchester United go to United States or Tottenham go to South America. Can you explain us, please, how can the clubs earn money during these tournaments? Not after, but during these tournaments, because they said that Arsenal could get from Asia something like £15 million. On what? Somebody paid to Arsenal for visiting China? Or from what is the source of this money?
Well, the source of the money is that because they are friendly matches, this is the one area that clubs own their own rights. So they will get broadcast income from the local country's broadcasting of the games. They will also get a share probably of gate receipts. Mm-hmm. But more important, as you indicate, is the long-term value. that they will build up their fan base in these countries, and as a result of that, they will increase their commercial income over a long period of time. And it is this area which the clubs can control themselves. And there is a lot of opportunity. For example, Bayern Munich, which is probably the most developed commercial club in the world, their commercial income is three times that of Arsenal. So Arsenal, who have only just started touring in the Far East, they will certainly have got money from broadcast and from match day from their friendly games on the tour. But more importantly, they will have tried to widen their fan base. They will tie up now with other suppliers like Citroën, mm-hmm. who have business there, and they will develop commercially in the long term.
But how do you think? Is it because of a big Arsenal fan base in Asia? And do Arsenal need to win trophies, things to be developed commercially in Asia and in other regions of the world?
Yes, in order to get the optimum result, in other words, the best result, you have to have a successful team. And a successful team really means winning trophies. And the most important trophies, of course, are the Premiership title and the Champions League. You can qualify for the Champions League as Arsenal have done for 15 years in succession, which gives you recognition, and it also brings you a lot of money from UEFA in the way that the Champions League money is divided up. But it doesn't mean that you're going to be able to rival Barcelona or Milan or, of course, Manchester United, all of whom who have won significant trophies. So for Arsenal, if Arsenal want to keep pace with the other clubs, they have to win trophies. And it has now been 7 years since they last won a trophy. So this season is absolutely vital for them. Because what might happen, if you look at a bad scenario for Arsenal, is they don't qualify for the Champions League. That means that they will lose £25 million, $30 million straight away. But more important than that, their rivals, like Manchester City, will be more popular because they are a winning team. In order to increase the fan base, you have to win trophies.
Mm-hmm. So if Arsenal lose this money, let's say Arsenal will finish fifth. If Arsenal lose this money, does it mean that Arsenal will not attract good players? And so the situation in Arsenal would be much more difficult than now, when Arsenal don't buy top players now, but they can buy quality players, at least like Arteta, to attract them by Champions League football.
You're quite right. But it's not only that they won't attract top players, they will also lose what top players they have. You have seen recently how if you go back a couple of years, Matthew Flamini, Alexander Klemm, and of course, Cesc Fabregas and Samir Nasri all left Arsenal for higher wages and the opportunity to win trophies elsewhere. And it would be a surprise if Robin van Persie, the only true worldwide star they have, stays with a club that does not play Champions League football. The plan that Arsene Wenger has, who is a genius of a manager, has shown to be faulty. He tried and he was successful when the club didn't have money because they were building a new stadium. But times have changed. First of all, with Chelsea and then with Manchester City. You have to spend money now in order to have success. Arsenal have the money to spend. People think they haven't, but they do. Wenger chooses, at least until this season, not to spend it. So there has to be a change in policy for Arsenal if they wish to compete, not just with Manchester City, but of course with the big continental clubs. And the significant fact is that whilst, if you look in the Premier League, Manchester United, Manchester City, Liverpool and Chelsea have all spent more than $40 million on a single player. Arsenal have not spent half of that on a single player. And the player that they bought for the most expensive money that they had, or the most expensive purchase they made, Andre Arshavin, has turned out to be a great disappointment. So not only have they not spent money in the amount that they should, but they haven't spent it wisely.
What do you think on Arshavin? Because he's Russian and he's Russian on the Russian national team. What we think that Arsenal don't play Arshavin on the position where they can get out best of him?
I agree with you. But it's a disappointment because when Arshavin arrived, he was greeted with a great deal of support. The Arsenal fans loved him, not only because of his skill, but because he was a talker and a leader. Because initially, there weren't the stars around, and he was played in his important position. But the Arshavin who scored four goals against Liverpool and the man who is playing for Arsenal today are two different people.
Why?
And for that, the answer probably lies, firstly, to the manager, who maybe doesn't talk to Arshavin enough. Arshavin feels that there isn't enough communication. Wenger doesn't tell everybody what they're doing wrong or what they should do right. And secondly, you've got to look at the player himself, who isn't as settled in England as he thought he was. So in English, we have an expression, six of one, half a dozen of another. In other words, it's the fault is on both sides. The fault is the players and the managers. But the biggest disappointment of all, of course, are the Arsenal fans, because Arshavin is a quality player who has not delivered.
Absolutely agree with you. So what do you think? If Arsenal will fail to finish top four this season, will be there some changes in policy, in ideas, or maybe in shareholders? Because we know that Usmanov now has 30%. Do you think there will be some changes in policy and in this also Arsenal story?
Well, there should be some changes because the board are all getting old together. The American owner, Stan Kroenke, believes in self-sufficiency. Self-sufficiency only works if you earn more money so you can spend more money. But Arsenal are not even spending the money that they have at the moment. So there has to be a change in policy. Arsenal have to spend more money on acquiring better and top-class players. Is the owner and is the manager prepared to do this? We don't know, but if they don't do it, Arsenal will fall further behind. Not only their main rivals in England up to now, but their closest geographical rivals, Tottenham Hotspur, who, notwithstanding the handicap of a small stadium, are meeting Arsenal and overtaking them where it matters on the field of play. So in a couple of weeks' time, we will have the North London Derby, and this will really crystallize the season. It will show you whether Arsenal have what it takes to get into the Champions League, or whether Tottenham, who have built a stronger squad and are playing a much better entertaining style of football than they have done for many years, whether it's Tottenham's turn after 50 years to overtake Arsenal.
Yes, I agree with you. What do you think on Tottenham? Do they prove now that there is no need to have oil money or to have a huge money in the club to get some success? Not winning Champions League, of course, but to get better. So the problem is not money, but the way of spending.
Yes, but you have to have a certain amount to begin with. And Tottenham's handicap is that whilst every home game they take $2 million, Arsenal take $4 million. So every Premier League game that happens, Tottenham fall behind Arsenal
twice
by $2 million. Now, a manager and a good coaching staff and the desire to spend money have all made up some of this shortfall. In other words, Harry Redknapp at the moment and his coaching staff are better than Arsenal Wenger and his coaching staff. The Arsenal players are not as good as the Tottenham players, but it will only take Tottenham so far. Tottenham need a bigger stadium because they need to fill in this gap of $2 million every match day.
Yes, I agree with you. But they are now developing a new stadium, as far as I understand, Northumberland, yes?
It's difficult, and of course it will take probably another 5 years. It shows what a wonderful thing the Arsenal board did by producing such a magnificent stadium, only a quarter of a mile from their old stadium. You couldn't really believe it, that in a well-developed city like London, that you could find a site like that and develop it so quickly and so expertly. And that was really down to three men. The man who found it for them, who was a supporter, called Anthony Spencer, and then the two directors, Danny Fisman and Ken Fryer, both of them long-term directors. And it is a result of the vision and the commitment of these three men that Arsenal have this extraordinary stadium. But they haven't made as much use of it as they should.
In other words, Arsenal never was even second in the league after moving to new stadium. So they don't have real advantage from the stadium.
Well, the real advantage is for future generations, which are now. To begin with, the first 2 or 3 years, of course it was difficult. And Wenger did wonderfully well by producing teams that were at least challenging for the title without any money. But for the last 2 or 3 years, they have had money, and he has chosen not to spend it. So the stadium is now delivering the money to the board. The board have a policy of conservatism. Wenger is a stubborn man and doesn't have the challenge that he should have. So there needs to be a change. Wenger is a genius, but even geniuses get it wrong sometimes, and he needs more support both on and off the playing side.
One thing I don't agree with you is that Wenger didn't spend money during 2005-2009. He spent 92% from the money Manchester United spent. So it spent it badly. But okay, Alex, tell me, please, your vision of Manchester City and its owners. A lot of people saying that a huge amount of money is bad for football. European body is trying to prevent investing money, private money, big private money to the football by implementing financial fair play. What do you think of financial fair play generally? Will it work? Do you support the idea?
Well, it will work. Yes, I do. And it will work if UEFA have the strength of character to make sure that it does work. In other words, that Manchester City and Real Madrid and Barcelona will only be able to spend what they earn. Now, of course, Real Madrid and Barcelona and Bayern Munich earn millions, $500 million in terms of turnover, and they should be able to spend a lot more than other clubs because life is on the side of the big clubs, because they have been big clubs by being successful over a number of years. And it is right that they should be able to spend more. But it's not right that Manchester City, who have not earned that success, can spend as much as Real Madrid. And UEFA have to make sure that the rules are kept to. In other words, if Manchester City win the Premiership, they will earn a lot more money. They should be able to spend some of that. But they can't spend in the way that they have been spending at the moment. They can't run up the debts that they have been running up. And it remains to be seen whether UEFA will be strong enough to say, I'm very sorry, Manchester City, but you have spent money you haven't earned, and therefore you cannot take your place in the Champions League. That will be the true test of financial fair play.
Absolutely, but it will take place in 3 years only.
Well, it will take place, but then financial fair play is starting now, and they can, and obviously it will be Manchester City cannot do what they did last year, which was to run up a debt which was more than they earned. You can't do that. So we'll see what they earn in the next few years. If they win the Champions League next season, then they will be in a better position.
I agree with you, but what do you think? Will, for example, let's say the business model of Real Madrid is not a business. They spend much more than they earn. But let's say in 3 years, Real would be in the same bad financial position as now, and UEFA must say to them that you will not take place in Champions League. Can you imagine Champions League without Real, without Man City, if Man City would win, for example, two times English championship? Can you imagine this story, Champions League without Real Madrid, for example?
Yes, I can.
You can.
I can because I think that the threat, if it is carried out, it probably won't be carried out, but it will work like this. For example, in France, they have long had a similar policy of financial fair play. So a couple of years ago, Monaco were relegated because they had spent more than they earned and they were carrying excessive debts, but they were reinstated on appeal. So I think that's all that might be necessary, that Manchester City will initially, well, let's not say Manchester City, but a club, a huge club that doesn't comply with financial fair play is initially told, I'm very sorry, but you can't take your place. They appeal. They show that changes will be made and they are reinstated. I think that's the more likely scenario. But UEFA have to be strong.
So, in other words, if ambitious businessmen would like to buy, I don't know, for example, Wigan, and to invest in Wigan £500 million, you think this is not right way for the football?
I think it's not the right way for football. No, I think that there have always been rich people in football. But until the arrival of Roman Abramovich at Chelsea, no one had ever spent so much, so quickly, and to such beneficial effect. And that is the problem, that you can change what has taken years to build, you can change it overnight. Luckily, money itself is not the complete answer. You need a good system, you need a good coach, and you need a very good eye to select players and then mold those players into a team. And you can see what has happened at Chelsea. You need patience from the owner. So Chelsea was successful, but if Roman Abramovich had been a different type of personality, they might have been even more successful, because he might have chosen different managers and he might have supported them better. So although money is the most important factor, it isn't the only factor.
Alex, in terms of ownership of the clubs, what do you think is better? Private people, private businessmen, or funds?
Private businessmen will tell you, what do you think we are? We're fans. But of course, their attitude is very different from fans. But fans are very fickle. What they want is success for the club. And what you need is a mixture of both, or more precisely, you need a benevolent autocrat, in other words, a generous dictator who actually is prepared to have a dialogue with the fans. So in England, we have football trusts, and a lot of these football trusts have helped the board. So much so that the people on the football trusts, in some instances, are better qualified to run the club. So what we need is this dialogue to be increased and developed, and we need representatives from the trusts on the board, but we still need the vision and the money of a philanthropist. In other words, we do need these wealthy owners, because otherwise you won't spend the wages, and only if you spend the wages will you get success. Because the more you spend on wages, the better quality of players you have, and the better quality of players you have, the more success you have. So you need the owners' money and the owners' vision, and then you need the culture of the fans' trust, who understand the club perhaps better. And if you have a good dialogue between these two bodies, then you have the perfect answer.
Okay, Alex, thank you very much for joining us today. Hope you will join us again in a short period of time. Thank you for your time.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
And we're finishing now our podcast. Alex Finn and Ivan Merk were with you. Bye for now.